We're moving chronologically, and we're moving now from the early modern world into modern French history. Our next presentation is offered to us by Seema Godfrey, who teaches French literature and cultural history at the University of British Columbia. She was the founding director there of the Institute for European Studies, and she's a specialist in 19th century literature. And as she notes, she's not only written on a lot of the usual suspects, but also on a few unusual ones as well, such as the author she's going to be discussing today. While she loves Balzac, Flaubert, and Proust, she is a great defender of second-rate fiction, a goldmine of cultural stereotypes unaffected by the distractions of good writing, as she puts it today. Her title today is, if I'm getting the new title right, Schnattis Are Us, From Jewish Rags to French Riches. Thank you, Seema.
Let's see if I can get my PowerPoint here. I think we had somebody else in between. No, that's me. Yeah, it's Schmattes Are Us. I don't know how many of you recognize that word. It's the Yiddish word for rags and for often used just for clothes. Excuse me. Fashion has long functioned as a powerful system of visual signification in French culture. Fashion, whether dictated by class-based sumptuary laws during the Ancien Régime or by bourgeois consumers in the post-revolutionary era, provided individuals with familiar cues for reading others around them. Those cues became increasingly unstable in the 19th century. A new sensibility informed dress, more specifically fashionable dress, with the power to reshape people's identities through their outward appearance. Young Rastignac, hero of Le Père Goriot, quickly learns that the fastest way up the rungs of the new social order is in an impeccable suit. For women, social confusion and mobility became even more evident with the mid-19th century emergence of the Maison de Haute Couture, creation of Charles Worth, who democratized dress by making available the grandest gowns to empress or courtesan, whoever could pay. The early 20th century Maison de Haute Couture, while not catering explicitly to the demi-monde, created by its fashion models, mannequins, images of desire and seduction that could translate young shopgirls into wealthy, upwardly mobile courtesans. In his memoirs, the great couturier Paul Poiret recalls the humble origins of his mannequins, transformed into princesses by their seductive allure. He describes André, for instance, as sot comme un dindon, but whose port de souveraine faisait réfléchir les princesses authentiques devant lesquelles elle se pavanait. The heroine of G.H. Rony's jeune 1924 best-selling novel La Courtisane Passionnée, Ruby Abramovich, is one such mannequin whose allure is further qualified by the gendered stereotype of la juive. High fashion model from a poor Jewish quartier in Paris, Ruby becomes, in the course of the novel, the passionate courtesan, magnificently dressed and wealthy beyond her dreams. To summarize, Ruby Abramovich is a hauntingly dark and beautiful new model at the couture house Belly. The novel opens with L'heure de la collection, where the mannequins are all put on display. One of the visitors to the collection is Esther Ruthson, fashion artist for an American magazine, who is struck by the carriage and beauty of the new model. C'était Ruby Abramovich dans sa petite robe. Elle la portait divinement. Esther Ruthson regarda durant quelques minutes, à mi-route de l'envie et de l'admiration, cette fille de sa race. Elle ne vous restera pas, she whispers to the head stylist of the house. Ruby posa son regard de velours sur celui d'Esther Ruthson. Les deux orientales se sourirent, sorte de complicité qui transforme le monde. And we get back to some Orientalism here. As Jews, the two women from opposite sides of the ocean are linked through their association with clothing and fashion. Beyond their complicity with clothing, though, the two women are linked by a complicitous female Jewishness, qualified throughout the novel as Oriental. Code word for exotic, erotic, and dangerous. The Oriental appeal of Ruby's beauty and sexuality is made specific by Ruby herself early in the novel. Non, répondait Ruby, j'ai la beauté de Cléopâtre. Cléopâtre l'a hantée depuis qu'elle l'avait vue au théâtre du Renard, où la reine courtisane se promenait aux trois quarts dévêtue devant les spectateurs émerveillés. « Je suis plus belle », avait pensé Ruby. « Je veux être quelqu'un », murmurait-elle avec une sorte de passion, « comme Cléopâtre ». The repeated image of Cleopatra, oriental seductress and sovereign courtesan, quietly haunts Ruby throughout her rise to wealth and privilege. Her final ambition will be playing the role of Cleopatra in a play composed especially for her. Word of her new role quickly spreads in the old Jewish quartier. There is excitement about her theatrical debut. Ma parole, une grande artiste comme ça, paraît qu'elle va remplacer Sarah Bernhardt. The reference to Sarah Bernhardt is at some level inevitable. The extraordinary actress who commanded turn-of-the-century Paris stage represented in many ways the stereotypical image of the modern Jewess, defined by her darkness, her mystery, and her sexuality, oriental, seductive, and dangerous. As a celebrity, Sarah Bernhardt was also intimately associated with fashion and became a model of sorts herself, with Poiret designing some of the more famous costumes for her. And I'm sorry this is so short. I have great images that I would have liked to share with you. In the 1920s, however, references to Ruby's embodiment of Cleopatra suggest another performer who, like Sarah Bernhardt and Ruby, also figured the intimately associated images of female Jewishness, fashion, oriental sexuality, and Cleopatra. And this was Ida Rubinstein. Orphan of a well-to-do Jewish family in St. Petersburg, Ida Rubinstein's great success came in 1909 when she opened the famous first season of Diaghilev's Ballet Russe in Paris, dancing the title role of Cleopatra alongside Nijinsky and Pavlova. When she had the opportunity in 1920 to again play the role of Cleopatra on stage, she ordered costumes from Maison Wirth at a cost of 15,000 to 20,000 francs each. And just a parenthesis, for those of you who don't know Ida Rubinstein, she was a great patron of the art. She was extraordinarily wealthy. And she's the person who commissioned Ravel's Bolero. Ruby Abramovich, in her Jewishness, her Orientalism, her exceptional dark beauty, recalls the image of Ida Rubinstein, which dominated the Paris art scene in the 1920s. Unlike the Rubinsteins, however, the Abramoviches are not well-to-do members of a modern middle-class intelligentsia. On the contrary, the Yiddish-speaking family Ruby comes from conforms to a much older image of the Jew, which haunted French culture, and that is the chiffonnier, the rag picker, and the fripier, the used clothing peddler. In sharp contrast to the modern world of high fashion and luxury in which Ruby circulates, her pious brother, Elias, a World War I veteran with a brain injury and a chiffonnier, lives in the squalid quarter known as La Mortellerie. And here's just a bit of the text, so you can see the world from which she has emerged. The association of Jews and rag pickers, chiffonniers, or second-hand clothes merchants, fripiers, was tenacious. References to vile Jewish fripiers go back centuries. In the Lettre d'un Sicilien, un de ses amis, contenant une agréable critique de Paris et des Français of 1714, this is just one example, Giovanni Paolo Marana refers to the tribe of fripiers, a vile race descended from what once was Israel. They buy and sell old rags and use clothing and live splendidly by stripping some to dress others. And this image has continued to this day, sometimes associated with the wandering Jew who also carries the bag. But the image of the rag picker is a very enduring one. While Ruby represents not only the pursuit of luxury, but the new economy of fashion, her brother Elias represents a much older economy of clothing, the schmata business, or rag trade, that continued to exist alongside maisons de haute couture well into the 20th century. Whereas the one fetishized novelty and change and produced modern French identities, the other represented the endurance of the past, past traditions and past clothing. While Ruby represents the sexualized stereotype of la belle juive, along with the Bernhardts and Rubensteins of her day, her brother Elias, with his love of rags, his squalor, his physical degeneration, represents lingering stereotypes of the male Jew. The juxtaposition of the two stereotypes creates from the start a jarring disjunction in the novel. When we first see Ruby walking through the foul-smelling streets of La Bortellerie, she is like une rose parfumée, carefully negotiating the streets to avoid sullying her outfit. Analogously, the insertion of Elias, the perennial Jewish rag picker, into Ruby's world of modern fashionability, where, with the right sum, new social identities are fabricated through dress, represents a moment of genuine suspense in the novel. In the final chapter of the book, Elias, along with his wife, comes to the opera to witness Ruby's debut performance as Cleopatra. Still suffering from his brain injury, he is utterly disoriented by the play. His beloved sister, Ruby, who has been playing the role of a Parisian courtesan, is now playing the role of Cleopatra and speaking in verse that he cannot follow. Le rêve et la réalité se confondirent. Elias gets out of his seat and wanders backstage. In a moment of madness, he pulls out a revolver and shoots his sister as she lies stretched out on stage on Cleopatra's divan next to the asp. La détonation, très faible, s'entendit à peine, et beaucoup crurent en voyant la pauvre petite s'étendre d'un bon mouvement sur le lit qu'elle mourait selon le rôle qu'on lui avait donné. True to her fantasy, Ruby Abramovich, who was born into the lowly world of rag pickers, dies in the role of Cleopatra, the queen. Ruby's glamorous identity, the product of fashion, is, in the end, as short-lived and ephemeral as the effects of fashion itself. Her death at the hands of her brother brings her back to the world of rags that she had escaped. But whereas one can rest assured that her body is given a proper burial, in fact, we see it in the opening pages of the sequel, La Courtisane Triomphante. One cannot help but wonder at the end of the novel what will happen to her clothes. Like Ruby's own inevitable turn to dust, could it be the fate of Ruby's haute couture to revisit Paris as Jewish rags?